To help us in our self-reflection before we partake of the emblems this morning, our brother Mark Snowden will offer us words of exhortation.
Well, good morning, everyone. At the end of December last year, I exhorted, and the readings in part for the day were taken from the book of Job. And that became the basis for my exhortation. My plan for today was to go in a little bit different direction, or a completely different direction. But I'd like to consider Job again today, in part because I think it's always a worthy exhortation, the lessons that are contained in the book of Job, and also because I was inspired by Brother Jamie's exhortation last week. At one point, Jamie said, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, sometimes life can throw some very challenging things in our way, and sometimes it's hard to see why. Also, we may feel like we're being punished or consider ourselves victims sometimes. That's true, isn't it? Jamie's advice was that we have to look at things through the lens of truth or God's view, and not our view, not our perspective, and that we often ask why. He also said that we have to believe that things happen for a reason. That's true. But more particularly, they happen sometimes for God's reasons, even if it's difficult to understand. And of course, when Jamie was saying this, I thought of Job. And when I looked at the readings this morning, I saw a direct connection. So let's turn to Job chapter 42, which was the second of the Job chapters that was read this morning. Job 42 and verse 11. And this, of course, is this passage is found at the conclusion of the book as God blesses or restores Job at the end of his life. So Job chapter 42, verses 10 and 11. And I'm reading this morning from the New International Version. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted him and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought upon him. What stood out to me, of course, when reading this was the phrase, all the trouble the Lord had brought upon him. And that begs a question. Why? Why would God have done this? It's a question that we often ask, as Jamie suggested. And it can be a difficult question to answer. And the one thing we have to understand here, though, too, is that Job knew that it was God that brought this trouble upon him. The author recognized this. In chapter 19, verse 21, Job says, the hand of God has touched me. God didn't just allow this to happen. He acted. That has to be the explanation. There's no other explanation. It wasn't an opposing powerful force. One of the conclusions that's established in the book is that God is in control. That can't be questioned. And some of the things that happened to Job were results of natural events, which means that God made them happen. The wind blew and it knocked the house over and his children were killed. That was a natural event. The only other explanation is that they happened by chance. But that's not supported in a narrative, is it? We see that in the first few chapters of the book. And if it did happen by chance, then that takes away from the lesson of the book, doesn't it? As Jamie said, we have to understand that sometimes things happen for a reason, even if it's difficult to understand. And what happened to Job is a perfect example of this. And so there's a lesson for us here too, I think, as well. And I think that lesson may come with a bit of a challenge at first, because it may be hard for us to identify with Job, certainly in relation to the man he was or the man he had become, and also because of the loss he experienced. He suffered more than I think probably any of us ever will. But the truth is, I think that Job is someone that we can all relate to, in part because the book isn't really about loss or pain and suffering. Because in so many ways, we actually really are like Job, at least in the way we perceive ourselves. Job was a good person. He was confident of that. That sounds like us a little bit. He was a slave to his mortality and in need of redemption, we find. That definitely sounds like us. And in the end, he did learn something. And we all have something to learn, don't we? So let's turn to chapter 1, where we're first introduced to Job. And read the first few verses of chapter 1. So Job chapter 1, verses 1 to 3. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. Now, there's two significant statements that stand out for me about Job in these verses. The first one is at the end of verse 3, where it says, he was the greatest man among all the people in the East. Probably a statement more about what he had or what he had become. This is likely how other people viewed him. The more profound statement is made at the end of verse 1, and it's repeated in verse 8, where God himself says, there is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. That's how God saw him. So in man's eyes and in God's eyes, there was no one like him. Maybe that's how Job felt too. But that view was about to be challenged, wasn't it? The claim made against Job in the next few verses, beginning in verse 9, is that it's easy to be upright if you have everything going for you. The claim was that he was sheltered. In verse 10, it suggested that God put a hedge around him, even blessed him or propped him up, and that what he had had, what he had become, what God had given him, protected him or put him in a position of reduced exposure to risk or sin. And so the challenge is presented in verse 11. Verse 11, stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And remember, it was only God that could do this. The challenge was, if you take away everything he has, you won't be blameless anymore. won't be upright. If God were to remove that hedge, that protection, take away the blessings, take away what he had, he wouldn't be the man he was before. And so what followed was the ultimate test of character. Everything that he had was taken away. 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, all gone. 7,000 sheep, all of the sheep that he had, were burned up. 3,000 camels were stolen. Countless servants burnt up or killed by the sword. His wealth, his livelihood, was gone. And his children. Can you imagine? 7 sons and 3 daughters. They were all together sharing a meal, and a mighty wind blew the house over and killed them all. An unimaginable test of character. At the end of chapter 2, we're told that when Job's 3 friends came to visit him, they sat on the ground for 7 days. And no one said a word. That's how great his grief was. That's how great his suffering was. But did Job curse God, as the challenge suggested? Well, the answer was in verses 20 and 22 of chapter 1, which for me are some of the most inspiring words in Scripture. Verse 20. At this point, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with any wrongdoing. So the test was applied. Everything that Job had was taken away. And all that was left was his character. In chapter 2 and verse 3, God says to the adversary, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He's blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil, and he still maintains his integrity, though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason." After everything that had happened to Job, he was still the same, still blameless, still upright. And even after he was physically afflicted, and his wife says in verse 9 of chapter 2, "Are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die." He still didn't sin. His possessions were gone. His children were dead. God appeared to be against him. His wife was no support. All he had left was his character and his life. And that character, it appeared, meant nothing to her. Verse 10, Job says to her, "You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" In all this, Job did not sin in what he said. So after everything that had happened, Job maintained his integrity, his character. And not because it was the only thing that he had left, but because it was the only thing that couldn't be taken away. Job remained upright. When we're introduced to him, he was blameless. After the challenge was applied, he was still blameless. God's view of him was correct. Not that there was anything that God could learn. He knew the end from the beginning. And besides, God had no direct reason to cause Job to suffer. But he did have a purpose. And for that purpose to have any meaning, Job's character had to be established, as did the human understanding of God and his character and his purpose. And we see that as the book unfolds. In chapter 3, Job finally breaks the 7 days of silence after his friends came to visit him, and he's looking for answers. Even his three friends were trying to reconcile what had happened. Job basically asks, why? Those three friends had an answer, didn't they? Their reasoning was that sinners pay a price, and since Job was suffering, paying a price, then he must be a sinner. But that wasn't why he was suffering, was it? That's a position that Job was willing to defend. And he does it throughout the book. He knew that they were wrong, and he defends his innocence. And the more he does, of course, the more they accuse him. And throughout this questioning, Job remained confident. He was confident in his defense. Confident in his righteousness. Turn to chapter 27. Chapter 27, verse 6. Job says, I will maintain my righteousness and never let go of it. My conscience will not reproach me as long as I live. That's what he believed. And even though he was confident in this, he continues in the next few chapters, of course, to describe his virtues and even defend himself with his virtues. Eventually, he says in chapter 31, verse 35, oh, that I had someone to hear me. I sign now my defense. Let the Almighty answer me. And God was going to answer him, wasn't he? Eventually, the focus of the book shifts from Job's defense, from the judgment of his three friends, from man's understanding, to God's understanding. But before it does, I think there's a statement that we can't overlook. It's key. In chapter 32, verse 1, it says, so these three men stopped answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Job had exhausted his defense, and his three friends stopped answering him because he was righteous in his own eyes. This is a statement that reveals a key problem. Turn back to chapter 29. Chapter 29, verse 14. And this is Job speaking. I put on righteousness as my clothing. Justice was my robe and my turban. The accuser's claim was that Job was sheltered, that his wealth, his family, his health, covered him, sheltered him. He had everything going for him. His life was easy. That's why he was blameless. That was the accuser's view. But Job defends himself with his righteousness. He was blameless. He was confident in this. And he thought that was enough. He thought his relationship with God was based on his righteousness. That was his defense. That was his shield. His covering. But both views were wrong, right? The book of Job isn't just a lesson on suffering, or doesn't just answer the question, you know, why we suffer. It's about righteousness and our limited view of it. That was a lesson for Job, and the reason there was no resolution to the debate or the question why. The conclusion that Job likely came to is in chapter 34, verse 9. Job thought, it profits a man nothing when he tries to please God. He was blameless. And he still suffered. The conclusion there is, there's nothing to gain. But he was wrong about that, wasn't he? And he was wrong about justifying himself. Verse 33 of the same chapter, chapter 34. Should God then reward you on your own terms when you refuse to repent? It's a good question, isn't it? That was the perspective that Job was missing. What he couldn't grasp was that we can't depend just on ourselves, on our own understanding, our own terms, but on God's. And God was about to answer him, wasn't he? Chapter 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm and said, "Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it, or what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy?" These statements, including the ones that follow in the next few chapters, including up to chapter 41, which we read this morning, reveal God's power and control over creation, over everything. In those chapters, there's some incredibly powerful statements made. Statements that reveal a contrast between human wisdom and divine wisdom. And that presents a challenge for Job. A challenge that's expressed in chapter 40 and verse 14. If Job could create and control, even understand these things, then God says in verse 14 of chapter 40, "Then I myself will admit to you that your own right hand can save you." But Job couldn't admit that, could he? He couldn't sit in God's position. And so he had to understand that there was ultimately nothing he could do to save himself. Salvation is only possible with God. In spite of our efforts, we can't save ourselves. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't think, what's the point, like Job may have. It just means that something more, something greater, is required. There is something to be learned in suffering, in perseverance. We have to understand that even the righteous suffer. Good things and bad things happen to all of us. Job understood that. He accepted it. And if God allows suffering, it must be for a reason. It's within his purpose. There is a greater lesson. And that is that God is far more understanding of us than we are of him. When Job realized that, he repented. Chapter 42, verse 1. Then Job replied to the Lord, "I know that you can do all things. No plan of yours can be thwarted. You ask, 'Who is this that obscures my counsel without knowledge?' Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. You said, 'Listen now, and I will speak. I will question you, and you shall answer me. My ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes.'" So what did Job learn? What do we learn about ourselves? Well, that we're not self-sufficient. And we need to pursue an understanding of righteousness that is outside of our understanding. Because sometimes we get caught up in our own perception, our own understanding. That's what happened to Job and his three friends. It's about something beyond our regular thinking. It's not about our righteousness. The true measure of righteousness is not revealed in us. It's revealed in him. It's not about us. It's not about what we've accomplished. It's about what has been accomplished for us. That's why we're here this morning. Not because we're righteous, but because of what his righteousness reveals and what his love and understanding has provided for us.